All right, Shabbat Shalom. Welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning study. Thank you very much for joining us this morning. We have a good friend of mine, Daniel, came in, drove some 700 miles to be here. So, Daniel, thanks for making it. I think if Daniel can make it, I don't know where the rest of you are. So please join us anytime. But we're glad that we can do this. We're blessed to have this modern technology that allows people to join us from around the world. I'm excited for a lot of things. I'm excited about this class. Last week, I sort of gave an introduction. This week, I'll be following up on that. And so I've really been wanting to teach this class for quite some time. Over the last several weeks, I've spent a good deal of time getting us to this point, I think. So lots to cover this morning. Today's class, I have called Jeremiah's New Covenant Scroll. Jeremiah's New Covenant Scroll. As I mentioned last week, I gave an introduction to the New Covenant as it appears in the book of Jeremiah. But in addition, this is like a bonus you get this week. In addition to the class on Jeremiah's New Covenant Scroll, I'm going to be going into, let's call it a key to understanding prophecy in context. So this is just sort of a thing that comes out in the teaching today that I think is very important. It's some things that we ought to look for when we peer into these wonderful texts. Last week, the text that forms the basis or the foundation for this class, as you know, is a single oracle found within Jeremiah, the current book of Jeremiah. It's found in an English Bible in Jeremiah 31, verses 31 through 34. This is, let's call it, the New Covenant prophecy. It's the only time in all the Hebrew Bible that the phrase New Covenant is mentioned. And it goes something like this. Behold, days are coming, saith Jehovah, when I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, though I was a husband to them, saith Jehovah. Right, you get this image as you read through it, which my covenant they broke, although I was their husband. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel in those days, saith Jehovah. I will put my Torah in their inward parts, write it in their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people. They shall teach no more every man his neighbor, saying, Know Jehovah, for they will all know me, from the least of them to the greatest of them, saith Jehovah, because I will forgive their iniquity, says Jehovah, and I will remember their sin no more. And that concludes all that we know in a direct reference to the New Covenant. And as I pointed out last week, based on this, quite a bit has happened in the world in the past couple of thousand years. A lot of ideas become associated with this new covenant. But what I want to bring forth today, which I touched on last week, is a proposal, if you will, that this new covenant oracle or this new covenant prophecy is actually part of a larger work. And I don't mean the book of Jeremiah, larger work. Of course, it's a part of that. But I want to propose and set forth to show you that this particular prophecy is contained within a scroll that is now part of the book of Jeremiah. It currently is found in chapters 30 and 31 of Jeremiah. Now, how do I come to this? Jeremiah, as we have it now, contains at least 14 smaller scrolls that are indicated in the text by a marker, a phrase that lets you know that this was once a smaller unit, I believe a written unit, and these were compiled. And I want to show you just so you get a feel for it. So we're going to go through a couple of them. Remember, there are 14 of these, and I don't have the time to go into all of them. But just go to Jeremiah chapter 7, Jeremiah chapter 7. And I want to show you this marker so that you'll be able to see it on your own. And here it is, Jeremiah 7, verse 1. The word that came to Jeremiah from Jehovah saying, and then the phrase follows. So this is an indicator. This is a word that came to Jeremiah from Jehovah saying, you see that? It says, okay, this is one of those words. Now I'm going to prove this. And then it goes on. Stand in the gate of Jehovah's house and proclaim there this word and say, hear the word of Jehovah, all Judah that enter in at these gates to worship Jehovah. You know the story. Jeremiah 7. Jeremiah 11. Go to Jeremiah 11. I'll just do a couple. And these always follow the white space. Chapter 11, verse 1. The word that came to Jeremiah from Jehovah saying. And then it follows. Go to Jeremiah 18. We're just working our way down because we're going somewhere with this. In chapter 18, verse 1, the word that came to Jeremiah from Jehovah saying, and then it follows. All right. Now, if you work through these 14, you will see that the text around these contain within these, let's call them words to Jeremiah, there is not only a series of oracles that are contained within, and quite often they link one with the other, but there's also important historical data that's written along with that. Now, last week, one of the things that I did, aside from showing you some of the methods to indicate that these are divinely inspired, thus saith Jehovah, Naum Adonai declares Jehovah, the first person usage that Jeremiah often refers, he says, and Jehovah spoke unto me saying, right? I showed you that, but also wanted to show you that there are places where we have a third person indicating that someone other than Jeremiah is writing this. I think one of the things that I've learned over time is to pay careful attention to this. Spent a lot of time on this last week, so I won't do it this week. But what I want you to think about is it's obvious when there's another writer. I think as a child growing up and loving Scripture my whole life, you know, I used to think Jeremiah sat down and he penned from chapter, you know, chapter 1, verse 1, and chapter 1, verse 2 and 3. But that's not the way these ancient works were compiled. And it's a giveaway. All you have to do is read it. And just think about it as you read. But based upon this third person, particularly this phrase is something which indicates to me that we have this third person who's writing. Who is the third person? We talked about that last week. It's a man named Baruch ben Neriah. And we know Baruch ben Neriah. We have two, not just one. If we found one, it would be an amazing discovery. But we found one in 1975 and then found another in 1996. And it is a bulla, a seal, an impression. And it one of them, the one that they found in 1996, even has a thumbprint. Right? Whose thumbprint? I don't know, but I'd like to think, you know, we want to touch the ancient world. This is one of the most amazing things. I said last week, if there were lines, like you could line up and they say, okay, you can meet anybody from the ancient world that you want to meet, who I'd find the line for Jeremiah. And I would hope that Baruch would be there with him, because I would like to say, man, you two together have given me such joy because I have read the works that you two put out and I love it. They're my favorite authors. All right. Now, I want to give you a taste of how this came into this book because my focus is on the New Covenant scroll, But in order to get there, I want you to feel, how did we get this? Go to Jeremiah 36, please. Jeremiah 36. It's one of the best things that we have in our Bible, because it is an indicator of the method whereby we got this. All right. So I want you to just, we're going to read verse 1, Jeremiah 36. And it came to pass in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, that this word came to Jeremiah from Jehovah, saying, all right, you get that? So the word, there's our marker. The word came from Jehovah to Jeremiah, saying, take a scroll and write in it all the words which I have spoken to you about Israel and about Judah and about all the nations from the day that I spoke to you, from the days of Josiah, and to this day. It may be that the house of Judah will hear all the evil which I purpose to do to them, that they may return every man from his evil way, that I may forgive them their iniquity and their sin. Now remember this, because what we're building up to is a new covenant where this promise is made. All right? Now, notice the next verse. Then Jeremiah called Baruch, the son of Neriah, and Baruch wrote from the mouth of Jeremiah all the words of Jehovah which he had spoken to him upon a scroll. You see how this happens? Jehovah tells Jeremiah, write all of these words in a scroll. Everything that I've told you, I want it all written in a scroll. And Jeremiah doesn't pull out the scroll and begin to write. He calls Baruch. This is the way he does it. Now, later, Baruch is going to be questioned. By the way, in here, it's Jeremiah is commanded to take a Megillat Sefer, a book of the scroll, basically, a piece of parchment. All right, so he's to get this. Now, in Baruch is later, look down at verse 17. And it says, this is where they're questioning him. And they asked Baruch, saying, tell us now, how did you write all these words at his mouth? We want to understand the process of how you got to this scroll. Remember the story, Jeremiah is locked up. And he tells Baruch, look, I'm confined. I can't go. So here, you take this and you go read it. And Baruch probably said, oh, here we go again. So he has to go read it. Remember the story, and they would read a little bit and snip it and throw it in the fire. This is a bad, bad deal. All right, but anyway. So he is now explaining, and then Baruch answered them. He dictated all these words to me, and I wrote them with ink in the scroll. That's it. So it's like we demonstrated. John helped me demonstrate this. You're sitting there, and Baruch is ready. He's got the pen of a ready writer, and Jehovah speaks to Jeremiah, and Jeremiah gives it to Baruch, and he writes it down. Now, he does this in a series. We have all of these different scrolls, and they become very important. Now, I have pored over these texts. Many of you have pored over these texts. I spend so much time looking through these documents, but I'm not the only one. Aside from you, you're not the only one. For thousands of years, people have studied these texts. Consider this, and this is part of what I need to show you today, even though it's not related to the subject of the new covenant. It deals with prophecy and understanding prophecy. And I want to tell you that Daniel studied these prophecies. Daniel studied these prophecies. Talking about the wisest of all, right? Has a book named after him, Daniel. Now, Daniel, what prophecy lover among us has not spent countless hours trying to determine the mystery of the book of Daniel? Particularly, I'm thinking about Daniel chapter 9. No prophecy book is going to leave this out. And I wanted to touch on it today just because it deals with the subject of the composition of these books and how we are to look at them. All right. So what I want you to get as I move into this is that Daniel's famous 70 weeks prophecy is based on the fact that he is looking into, considering, contemplating Jeremiah's prophecy. All right, let me show it to you. I want you to go with me to Daniel 9, Daniel chapter 9. This is your bonus lesson today. Beginning in verse 20, Daniel 9, 20. And while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and presenting my supplication before Jehovah my God for the holy mountain of my God, while I was still speaking in prayer, the man Gabriel, whom I had seen in the vision at the beginning, approached close to me in swift flight about the time of the evening sacrifice, and he made me understand. And he talked with me, and he said, O Daniel, I am now come forth to give you skill and understanding. At the beginning of your supplication, the commandment went out, and I am come to declare it, for you are greatly beloved. Therefore, look into the word and consider the vision. I want to talk to you a minute about look into the word and consider the vision. Look into what word? Is he talking about your Tanakh? Is he talking about your King James? Look into the word, like generally, you know, what is he specifically talking about? Well, first of all, it doesn't actually say look into the word. It's tied to the root word understand. So what he's really telling Daniel is he's saying understand in the word. Understand in the word and basically thereby understand the vision. So my question is, look and understand in what word? Understand what vision? See, some people might think he's talking about a specific word. Maybe there's a word that I'm supposed to find in this text. Maybe there, watch this. Let's keep going. Verse 24. Remember, he says, understand in the word, understand the vision. 70 weeks are determined concerning your people and concerning your holy city to finish the transgression, to make an end to sin, to atone for iniquity, to bring in everlasting righteousness, seal up vision and prophet, to anoint the most holy place. Know therefore and understand that from the going forth of the commandment to restore and to build Jerusalem until an anointed prince shall be 7 weeks, then for 62 weeks it will be built again with squares and moat, but in a troubled time. And after 62 weeks shall an anointed one be cut off, and none will be left to him. The prince, people of a prince that will come shall destroy the city and the sanctuary, and his end shall be with a flood, and to the end of the war desolations are decreed, and he will make a strong covenant with many for a week. During half the week, he will cause the sacrifice and offering to cease, and upon the wing of abomination shall one come who makes desolate until the decreed destruction is poured out on the desolator. Wow, that could keep us busy for weeks. Maybe that'd be a future class that we'll do, like 70 weeks. That's how long it'd take, right, Daniel? Now, he says this after he tells him, understand in the word, understand the vision. He's referring to something specific. So every prophecy person who jumps in the book of Daniel and goes, oh, I know what this means. There are 62 weeks. The command that went forth was this year, and they chart it, and they go, ah, blah, here it is. Here's what this means. But very few that I know say, I want to see what Daniel was seeing and what Gabriel is referring him to. Daniel is removed one. My man Jeremiah is who Daniel is studying, right? So here's what we have to do. What's he looking at? Go back to Daniel chapter 9, verse 1. Daniel 9, verse 1. Context, people. In the first year of Daryavesh, the son of Ahakverosh, of the seed of Madai, who was made king over the realm of the Chaldean, the Kasdim, in the first year of his reign, I, Daniel, considered in the books the number of the years whereof the word of Jehovah came to Jeremiah the prophet, that he would accomplish 70 years in the desolations of Jerusalem. You see that? He's saying he's considering in the prophecies of Jeremiah this whole matter. And it causes him then to begin to fast and pray and supplicate. But he's looking at Jeremiah. Now go with me. Let's do the same thing quickly. We're not going to get into the prophecy. We're going to go look at Jeremiah chapter 25. Jeremiah chapter 25. Now, notice how Jeremiah 25 begins at the white space. The word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Yeshayahu. All right, so he's going to put this, he gives us a date. That was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babel, which Jeremiah the prophet spoke to all the people of Judah and all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah, and until this day, these 23 years, the word of Jehovah has come to me, and I have spoken to you from morning till night, but you have not hearkened. He goes on. Now, this particular prophecy, as you work through, deals specifically with this 70 years. So as much as I would like to get into it, I'm not going to dig so much into Jeremiah 25. But I want to bring up this point. When Gabriel tells Daniel, look into the word, I believe he's referring to the word which came to Jeremiah from Jehovah, and thereby understand the vision. Okay? So just a little point for all you big prophecy people and you really want to study the book of Daniel, that is something that you ought to think of. Now, just to tie a couple of these points together, we know that Jeremiah begins his prophetic career in the 13th year of Josiah. Remember, Josiah is 8 years old when he becomes king. And so when he's 21, when Josiah is 21, Jeremiah's career as a prophet begins, right? So this is important because I believe that Jeremiah at the time is also a young man. So you have a young man who is of the seed of David, and you have a young priest. I think this would be a great book. I just don't have time to write books. But you have these two, and they're going to work in concert together. So Jeremiah, if you wanted to, let me just give you a little bit of this while we're into it. Jeremiah 1, go to Jeremiah 1:1. The word of Jeremiah, the son of Hilkiahu or Hilkiah, of the priest who were in Anatot in the land of Benjamin, to whom the word of Jehovah came in the days of Josiah, the son of Amon, king of Judah, in the 13th year of his reign. See there, I just wanted to back up what I said. He begins his prophetic career in the 13th year. Now, I don't want to go too much into the nitty-gritty of this, but just so you kind of get a feel, the world, the prophetic world is ripe. What just happened? 13th year of Josiah, let me back you up 1 year before Jeremiah gets his prophetic utterances beginning. The year before that, the 12th year of Josiah's reign, is when Josiah begins a religious reform. Look at 2 Chronicles 34. 2 Chronicles 34, verse 1. Josiah was 8 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned in Jerusalem for 31 years. He did that which was right in the sight of Jehovah and followed in the ways of David his father, declining neither to the right hand to the left. In the 8th year of his reign, while he was still young, he began to seek after the God of David his father. And in the 12th year of his reign, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of the high places and the Asherim and the carved idols and the molten images. And it goes on and describes this religious purge. Now, the religious purge begins in the 12th year of his reign. He's 20 years old. The next year, a young prophet by the name of Jeremiah steps on the scene. You see, because Jehovah wants to strengthen this move. So he puts in his presence the man Jeremiah. Now, I wanted to also add, because this is fun stuff, and I love these prophecies that that Jeremiah brings forward. In, by the way, in the 5th year, 5 years into Jeremiah's prophecy ministry, his prophetic ministry, 5 years in, a scroll is discovered in the temple. The scroll is discovered by a priest by the name of Hilkiah. All right? You know something interesting? Jeremiah, his dad is named Hilkiah, and they're from Anatot. So I believe that Jeremiah's father, I'm not the only one, you can look it up, you can Google it, other people brighter than I have come up with this, but there's this idea that Jeremiah saw this, it's the original scroll. It's the scroll of Moses, the teaching of Moses. All right, so religious reform, everything's going on. Josiah's already kicked this thing off. He's a young man. The prophet is there. They're trying everything in their power to call forth to the people of that day, saying, repent, amend your ways, amend your doings. Does it work? We'll talk about it. But we're here to study a different prophecy. We're here to study what I have called Jeremiah's New Covenant Scroll. This particular prophecy that I kicked us off with this morning in English Bibles, it's Jeremiah 31, 31 through 34. If you're in a Hebrew Bible, it's Jeremiah 31, verses 30 through 33, numbering slightly different. But this prophecy is only 4 verses long. In Hebrew, it consists of 92 words. That's it. Jeremiah's New Covenant scroll, on the other hand, the scroll, the word of Jehovah, which contains this oracle of which so much is made, contains 18 sections. 2 chapters in your current Bible, chapter 30 and 31. 18 sections. And within these 18 sections, I believe, is supporting information that is very important. I don't think you can take an isolated pericope, an isolated saying, this 4 verses and get the full picture. I just don't think you can. Because I think by pulling just this isolated prophecy from its greater context, we miss some really important information. All right? So what I want to do is ask the question, or I want to tell you, if we're going to understand this prophecy that you've been dealing with, I'm going to tell you like Gabriel told Daniel, understand in the word, understand the vision. Is that pretty cool? It's exactly what happened in Daniel. That's why I did all that. So I want to say, what is the word? The word is this New Covenant scroll. It consists of markers. It consists of individual oracles that together bring forth some really important things that are tied to and associated with the New Covenant. Okay? So around it, and in the greater context, we find some interesting points. Here are a few. We do have a virgin that appears in this story. We have a story about Rachel weeping, right? Because I'm talking about the new covenant, so I want you to write these down. We're going to read about God's Son. We're going to read about one dying for sins. I'm talking about Jeremiah now. You ready? We're going to read about forgiveness of sins and the return of God's Son. Now we're ready to talk about a new covenant. Those are some big ones, right? I mean, there's more, but those are some pretty big ones. And it's all in the Word. Understand in the Word, understand the vision. Let's work through this, shall we? Who's ready to work through this? Yeah. Jeremiah chapter 1. I'm sorry, Jeremiah chapter 30. I want to work through all of Jeremiah, but I don't have time today. Chapter 30. Now, I'm not going to read every bit of this, but I'm going to hit some highlights just for the sake of time. In Jeremiah, I'm going by sections. In other words, if you follow the white spaces, these are often historical things, or they could be oracles, but we're just going to kind of hit a few high points in each of these. So the first one is chapter 30, verses 1 through 3. What this does is, the purpose of these three verses is to give us the marker that this is a word from Jehovah to Jeremiah, and then it's going to set forth the context for this scroll, which includes the New Covenant prophecy. See, the prophecy is just part of it. There are a lot of prophecies in the New Covenant scroll. I like that name. All right. Now, here we go. I'm going to read you verses 1 through 3. The word, Jeremiah 30, verse 1 through 3. The word that came to Yirmiyahu, Jeremiah, from Jehovah, saying, Ko amar Yehovah, thus says Jehovah, God of Israel, saying, Write all the words that I've spoken to you in a book. Now, we know how he does that from Jeremiah 36. He would have said, Brooke, we got to write. For lo, yamim ba'im, days are coming, saith Jehovah, when I will bring back the captivity of my people, Israel and Judah, says Jehovah, and I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it. Purpose of the scroll. He says, I want you, Jeremiah, to write all the words which I'm about to give you in a scroll. Why? Because I'm going to bring them back. So here's what you need to get first. The purpose of the New Covenant scroll is to announce good tidings. I just threw that in. To announce, it is good news, that Israel and Judah are going to come back. That's the purpose of the scroll. It should grab us right off the bat because we know it's divine. Ko amar Yehovah, thus says Jehovah. So it's like, okay, I want you to write this scroll. Here's the way it begins. Thus says Jehovah. That way when somebody picks it up, it's like, whoa, Jehovah said this, right? And then it ought to interest us because it's speaking of the coming days. Now, how soon? We don't know. It doesn't give us a date. In fact, chronologically, people debate, when was this given? I don't know, but the context kind of shares a little bit. We can kind of begin to look and derive things from the text itself of the scroll. But notice he says, translations do it differently. Some say, bring back the captivity. I think other translations say, restore the fortunes. And that's kind of an unfortunate translation to say restore the fortunes because people are like, man, I could use some of that restoring of the fortunes kind of thing. This is talking about bringing back those who are scattered. In fact, the Hebrew, this phrase is used variously, but it's a repetition of the Hebrew word shuv, which means to return. So it's like those who are away are going to be brought back. That's really what it means. So to restore the fortunes, to bring back the captivity, the bottom line is he's saying it's a return. It's a return on return. It's a double return. All right. So And they're going to return to the land given to the fathers to possess. So there are a lot. If you did a study on this particular phrase, which is bring back the captivity or restore the fortunes, you'll find that I'm right on this. Go to chapter 29, verse 14 of Jeremiah. Let me just give you a couple examples. Let's look at verse 12, 29, 12. Then you will call upon me, and you shall go and pray to me, and I'll listen to you. You shall seek me and find me when you search for me with all your heart, and I will allow myself to be found by you, says Jehovah. I will restore you from your captivity. That's our phrase. Right? And I'll gather you from all the nations and from all the places into which I've driven you, says Jehovah, and I'll bring you back to the place from which I caused you to be driven away. Right? So that's what it means. That's what this prophecy means. You can hold your hand in Jeremiah 30 and go to Ezekiel 39. Ezekiel 39, verse 25. Therefore, thus says the Lord God, now I will bring back the captivity of Jacob and have mercy on the whole house of Israel, and will be jealous for my holy name, and they will be quit of their shame and all their faithlessness in which they've been faithless to me when they dwell securely on their land with none to make them afraid, when I brought them back from the people, gathered them out of their enemies' lands, and am sanctified in them in the sight of many nations. You see there? Verse 28, then they shall know that I am Jehovah their God who caused them to be led into exile among the nations, but I've gathered them to their own land and have left none of them there anymore. Nor will I hide my face anymore from them, for I've poured out my spirit upon the house of Israel, says Jehovah Elohim. All right, one more. Again, you can keep your hand in Jeremiah 30. Go to Amos, the book of Amos. And let's see, chapter 9, Amos 9. Amos 9, verse 14. Again, we're talking about the phrase, restore the fortune. Verse 14. And I will bring back the captivity of my people, or some translations will say restore the fortunes, of Israel, and they will build the waste cities and inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards and drink their wine, and they also shall make gardens and eat the fruit of them, and I will plant them upon their land. They shall no more be plucked up out of their land, which I have given them, says Jehovah your God. So that's the point. The point of the scroll, the Jeremiah New Covenant scroll, is to say, bottom line, I'm going to cause a return. I'm going to bring them back, and I'm going to plant them in this land in faithfulness, and they're not going to be plucked up again. That's right. That's what this is about. Now, in chapter 30 and verse 4, it says, because the next section we're going to deal with is chapter 30, verse 4 through 9, it says, these are the words that Jehovah spoke. My translation says, concerning Israel and concerning Judah. It's not what the Hebrew says. The Hebrew says that this is, these are the words that Jehovah spoke to Israel and to Judah. So reading it like this, you think, well, it's just about them. No, it's to them. He's like, look, this is a message to these people. The message contained in this Jeremiah New Testament scroll is to the two families or the houses that represent his eternal people, which, by the way, in the New Covenant scroll, towards the end of it, two separate sections are devoted to stressing the eternal security, if you will. I don't like to use that phrase. Maybe let's think of it. Let's use it. The eternal security of his people. These are his people, and they are an eternal people, and they always will be his people. He says if the stars and if they quit giving their light, you know, that's pretty sure. I mean, if it isn't, nobody's going to know about it anyway. So the promise is sure, and that's what he wants to make clear. So it's to these two houses, Israel and Judah, that this New Covenant scroll is directed, and based on what we read in the New Covenant prophecy, it is to whom the New Covenant is given. the new covenant. Behold, days are coming, Yamim, Baim, days are coming, saith Jehovah, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, right? And it's talking about a people. Like, you can't spiritualize this. You can't replace somebody else in there. You've got to read what it said. Who are you talking to, Jehovah? To Israel and to Judah. I'm going to make a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Judah. And then it continues to stress that point. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke. See, it's a group. He's talking about a people, Israel and Judah. That's who the new covenant's to. Somebody might go, well, I want to be part of that. Well, you can always be part of a covenant. Let not the stranger say, Isaiah chapter 56, grab a hold of the covenant, baby, grab. But you must accept the terms of the covenant. Okay? All right. Chapter 30, verse 4 through 9. Again, for sake of time, we're going to roll through this. This describes a time of Jacob's trouble. None like it. This is going to be a time unimaginable. But out of it, Jacob will be saved. Jacob will be delivered. It's even described in terms of delivery. You look down at the earth in Jeremiah chapter 30, verse 4 through 9, and it says, why do I see men holding themselves like they're having a baby? It's like labor pain. It's so intense. But God said, relax. You'll be delivered from this. Birth pains. The rabbis really talk about the birth throes, bringing in this, what they call the messianic age. The birthing. That's why you see people holding like they're having a baby. This is what the description is. And then it goes on, it describes, it's like slavery. The terms are used like the slavery from Egypt. Because there's an association in Jeremiah's mind. It's the delivery of this people. So he makes constant referrals back to that. You know, the greatest, like the Bible describes the Exodus in Deuteronomy 4, this great thing. So he's making connections back with it, you know. And he's often associating, like Jeremiah 16, verse 14 through 16, Jeremiah chapter 23, verse 5 through 7, where he says, days are coming, saith Jehovah, when I will deliver, you know, the children of Israel from not just Egypt, but from all the lands. But it's that Exodus motif. You think about it, you're like, oh, wow, this is like a great Exodus. That's what he's describing. All right. It's going to be even greater, though. He's going to do a new thing. It's going to be even greater. In fact, it's going to be so great, Jeremiah 16, 14 through 16 says, that they won't even mention. They won't even talk about the Exodus from Egypt. Somebody will say, you know, I remember hearing a story about our fathers were in Egypt, and they'll say, yeah, so what? Egypt and Syria and Babylon and America and Canada and Australia and New Zealand and Antarctica. That's a story. Egypt, yeah, so what? It's just a little bitty, it's a speck. Jeremiah said, it's coming a day. Do this for yourself sometimes. Study the phrase, days are coming. Days are coming. That'd be a good class. Write that down, Dave. We'll do that next time. Verses 10 through 11, there is a focus on the servant, Jacob. This is the next section. Again, it's talking about delivery from a faraway land. There's a new idea that comes in here in chapter 30, verse 10 and 11. The enemy is destroyed and Israel is saved. But that's, again, that's that Exodus motif. You know, the children of Israel, when they leave Egypt, they're saved. The Egyptians are destroyed. All right. Now, in verse 12 through 17, it's a description where there's no remedy. It says, it basically describes the people as sick, wounded, forgotten, forsaken. They have many sins and iniquities. So this section is devoted to describing the current state of Israel and Judah, to whom the new covenant scroll is addressed. They're in bad shape. No remedy. There's no remedy. It's like the writer of Kings says, until there was no remedy. Can you imagine? It's like you go to the doctor, you get a bad bill of health, and they're like, oh, sorry. I mean, there's no remedy. But then amidst that, you start getting a little bit of light, like, okay, well, maybe there's some hope here. Because again, it says the enemies are going to be captive. The ones who took you captive, oh yeah, they're going to be captive now. That's fair. And by the way, Israel will be healed, healthy, and restored. It's a beautiful story. Verses 18 through 22. Bring back the captivity. Bring back the captivity. There's our phrase again. In fact, in verse 18, it talks about the tents and dwellings of Jacob. You know that's only used in one other place? Go all the way back into the wilderness. And I want you to think about the words of a prophet, not an Israelite prophet, but a guy by the name of Bilam. And he says, Matovu ohaleka Yaakov mishkanoteka Yisrael. How goodly are your tents, O Jacob, your dwellings, O Israel. This is saying, Jehovah is saying, remember what I showed that pagan prophet? It's coming. Remember, Bilam says, I see it, but not yet. I behold him, but not near. See, this pagan prophet gets to look all the way, and he sees the new covenant scroll. That's some good vision. Beautiful story. Look at it, Numbers 24:5. So what this section, verses 18 through 22, is talking about, more detail about the bringing back of the captivity. People and places are restored and rebuilt. Again, the enemy is punished. The righteous leaders are restored. And then a phrase that is typical of covenant language comes in. My people, you will be my people and I'll be your God. And this phrase occurs quite often in Scripture, as you know. Variously worded, used many times. The next section, chapter 30, verse 23 through 31:1. See, this is an example of chapter verses not lining up with the ancient divisions. So 31, you would think, well, I'm going to start 31:1, but that's the closing of the previous section. It highlights the above points. Jehovah's purposes are done. And it says, in the latter days, you'll understand this. So this indicates that the Jeremiah scroll is going to be given a long time ago, right? But it's going to be understood in the latter days. The eyes of the blind shall see, in the words of a book, a new covenant scroll maybe, who knows? All right. Now, in chapter 31, verses 2 through 6, 31, 2 through 6, we read that those who have escaped the sword find grace in the wilderness, right? Again, we got a lot to go through, so I'm just flowing through this. But Jehovah appears from far away. And basically in this section, verses 2 through 6, he's affirming his eternal love and loyalty, promising to rebuild. There's even talk of planting of vineyards in the hills of Samaria. Watchmen go to Zion. You know, they're gonna say, let us go to Zion. How many times in prophecies do we read about that? You know, it's like, let us go. People are going to say, let us go up to Zion. In chapter 31, verses 7 through 9, Jehovah tells an unnamed group what to say. In other words, these are among the nations, and these people among the nations are going to, they have a part in this. You know what they're supposed to say? Save, O Jehovah, your people. There's a role for these who say, well, I'm not part. Yeah, you're part. You have a job too. And then, as you follow in the text, Jehovah begins to say how he's going to do it. In the previous oracle where they said, let us go to Zion, look at verse 8 and 9. Let's look at verse 7. Behold, I will bring them from the north country and gather them from the ends of the earth, and with them the blind and the lame, the woman with child, her that travails with child together, a great company shall return there. They shall come with weeping and with supplication. I will lead them. I will cause them to walk by rivers of waters in a straight way in which they shall not stumble. They shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Weeping as they come. Weeping as they come. That reminds me of something else Jeremiah said. Hold your hand here. Go to Jeremiah 50. Jeremiah 50. See, we get pictures throughout these prophecies that shed light. Jeremiah chapter 50, verse 4. In those days and in that time, says Jehovah, the children of Israel shall come, they and the children of Judah together, weeping. Weeping as they come, they shall go and seek Jehovah their God. They shall ask the way to Zion. Remember, we just read that in Jeremiah 31. Ask the way to Zion with their faces towards it, saying, come and let us join ourselves to Jehovah in a perpetual covenant that shall not be forgotten. Now, I've done this before, but look, I want you to understand. Here's what they're doing. They're like, that's Zion. Like, you're in Zion. You watching me. You're in Zion. And I'm walking towards you, and I go, excuse me, can you tell me where Zion is? Your face is turned towards it. Keep coming. See, it's like the Spirit has led them. They're going in the right direction. But they're weeping as they go. That's what Jeremiah 31 says. Weeping. The theme of weeping is also found in verse 18 later. Ephraim, it says, he's lamenting, he's moaning. That we're talking about Israel coming back. There's weeping. Jeremiah's New Covenant scroll identifies Ephraim as God's son. Remember I told you the New Covenant scroll mentions the Son of God? It does. It names him. In Jeremiah 31:9, we just read it. Right? Everything is here in the scroll, verse 8 in the Hebrew, I guess. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Again, if you go back to the original Exodus, Exodus chapter 4, verse 22 and 23, Jehovah says, go tell Pharaoh, let my son go. If he doesn't let my firstborn son go, Israel's my firstborn. If he doesn't let Israel go, I'm going to kill his firstborn. Here again, Jeremiah 31:9 says God's son is Ephraim. Now, as we move into the text, the next four verses deal with a scattered flock. Remember in Jeremiah chapter 50 and verse 6? In Jeremiah chapter 50, you don't have to turn there because I can get there quicker than a crowd probably. But Jeremiah 50 verse 6, get this. My people have been lost sheep. Their shepherds have caused them to err, caused them to go astray. They've turned them away on the mountains. They've gone from mountain to hill. They've forgotten their resting place. All that devoured them, all that found them devoured them. It's just, so this scattered flock in Jeremiah chapter 31, verses 10 through 14, it describes the redemption and the ransom of a people who now are known as the lost sheep of the house of Israel. They've been scattered. But somehow, a shepherd is going to bring them back. When they come, they're going to be weeping. Their faces are turned in the right direction. But there's weeping. There's a lot of weeping in this new covenant scroll. In fact, if you listen, there's another voice of weeping. But this one I hear is a woman's voice. I can distinctly tell that it's a woman. And it's Rachel. She's weeping inconsolably. Says because her son is not. And it says plural, but then when it says for they are not in Hebrew, it says for he is not. you can say this means whatever you want to, but scripturally, Rachel's son that she weeps for is Joseph. In fact, and he is not, is the very way that everyone described Joseph in the story in Genesis. Look with me. Let me just do this. Go to Genesis chapter 42. Genesis 42. You have to know the stories to understand. So if you go to Genesis 42, go to verse 13. This is where they're explaining Joseph knows the brothers, but they don't recognize him. And they're telling him, because remember he said, you guys are spies. I know what you're doing here. And so he knows them. They don't know him. And here's what they say, verse 13, chapter 42, Genesis. And they said, your servants are 12. We're brothers. Sons of one man in the land of Canaan. And behold, the youngest is this day with our father, and one is not. That's the exact phrase. Look, it's not like it's close, like you go, oh, it's kind of close. I see where you're going. No, it's exactly. Rachel is weeping for the one who's not. So the boys go, one is not. That's Joseph. See, if you want to understand the Hebrew prophets, you have to know the Hebrew scriptures. You can't impose your own ideas on them. It doesn't work. Now, look at verse 32, same chapter, 42, 32. We're 12 brethren, sons of one father. One is not. The younger's with the father. You see that? Now, go back to chapter 37 of Genesis. 37. Rachel refuses to be comforted. She's inconsolable. In Jeremiah 31. Verse 14 or 15, whichever way your translation or your Bible shows it. She's inconsolable. You know that phrase, her weeping is inconsolable, it's only used of one other person in one other situation, and guess who it's weeping for? Joseph. Look at Genesis 37. You remember the story. The story is that they have thrown Joseph into a pit and the Ishmaelites buy him and so forth. And look at verse 29. Reuben returned to the pit, and behold, Joseph was not in the pit, and he rent his clothes. And he returned to his brothers and said, the child is not. There's our phrase again. He's not. That's it. Which is why Rachel's weeping. Where shall I go? And they took Joseph's coat, killed the kid of the goats, dipped it in blood of the coat, and they sent the coat with long sleeves, or the coat of many colors, as translations have it, and they brought it to their father and said, we found this. Do you know whether it's your son's coat or not? And he knew it. Can you imagine? And he said, it's my son's coat. An evil beast has devoured him. Joseph is without doubt torn in pieces. Yaakov rent his clothes, put on sackcloth and loins, and mourned his son for many days. And all his sons and all his daughters rose up to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. And he said, I'll go to my grave in mourning. Two times in all of Scripture, ladies and gentlemen, there is an inconsolable, a refusal to be comforted. That phrase is used only twice, once for Rachel, once of Jacob, both of which are mourning the one who is not. Now, Joseph is thought to be dead. Guess what? He's not dead. Joseph isn't dead. You thought he was dead. Everyone thought he was dead. They said he was dead. They said he's not. He, as far as people know, he's dead. We've mourned him. We've had a funeral, but he's not dead. Look at chapter 45 of Genesis. Genesis 45 and verse 25. 45, 25. This is after the proverbial cat's out of the bag, right? They went up out of Egypt, and they came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father, and they told him, saying, O Joseph Kai, Joseph is yet alive. I mean, I can imagine that's the first thing. They're running up to dad. Oh, Joseph, hi. Joseph is alive. And he's governor over the land of Egypt. And his heart fainted, for he believed them not. And they told him all the words of Joseph, which he had said to them. And when he saw the wagons which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Yaakov, their father, revived. And Israel said, it is enough. Yosef, my son, is still alive. This is the greatest story. Joseph is alive. And in chapter 31 of Jeremiah, verses 16 through 20, that same joyous message is given. The message in the New Covenant scroll is this: stop your weeping. Stop. Oh, Joseph, hi. Joseph is still alive. There's no need to weep. He's coming home. Your son, which you thought was dead, is alive. Ephraim, God's firstborn son, will return. Rachel was weeping for Ephraim. Now hear the word of Jehovah. Go with me to Jeremiah 31. In Jeremiah 31, verse 19, this is Jehovah speaking. Is Ephraim my dear son? Is he a darling child? For whenever I speak of him, I remember him still. I will surely have mercy on him, saith Jehovah. Not only does God say who his son is, he describes a yearning in his heart every time I speak of him. Now, how do we return? How does this group return? This New Covenant scroll continues. In fact, verses 21 through 30, there are three sections of oracles that basically say, return the way you came. It's like follow the way in which you came. Set up road marks for yourself. Make signposts. And then a virgin appears in our story, in our New Covenant scroll. Not the likely virgin. One who people talk about in the streets. The rumors. She's considered not a good girl. She's promiscuous. She's rebellious. But in God's eyes, she's the pure, chaste virgin that he met in the wilderness. And he says, return, O virgin. Follow the signs. I believe that that's going on in our day. And then, of course, you can't read through these texts without touching on the way this vision ends. James Tabor taught one of my favorite all-time classes, called it God's Dream. Because if you look at the last verse, upon this I awoke, verse 25, and behold, my sleep was sweet to me. You go, well, that's Jeremiah. Read it in context. It's Jehovah speaking. You're thinking, he who watches Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. I get it. It's a poetic image that should knock your socks off. That the God of all creation says, and with that I awoke. It's God's dream. It's the New Covenant scroll. It's the restoration of all. The impure wife has become a virgin. Who would have thought it? The son that people thought was dead has come back to life. The key, an important part of this, is that one must pay for one's sins. And if you look at chapter 31, verses 29 and 30, this leads us into the new covenant. It says, look, there used to be this thought that someone else could pay for sins, but that's not going to work. It says in Jeremiah 31, 29 and 30, that the one who sins must die. No longer will it be said the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge. The one who sins must die. This is the new covenant scroll I'm talking about. In the new covenant, one can't die for the sins of another. And that's also found in Deuteronomy chapter 24, verse 16. It's very important that we get that in context, this is stated. Because right after it says that, watch this. In those days, they shall no more say, the fathers have eaten sour grapes and the children's teeth are set on edge, but everyone shall die for his own iniquity. Everyone that eats sour grapes, his teeth shall be set on edge. You know what the next word from Jehovah is? The very next word. Behold, days are coming, saith Jehovah, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah. Not like the covenant that I made with their fathers when I took them by the hand to lead them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke. Though I was a husband to them. The very next thing. So key is understanding that we must pay the price. And this brings us to the new covenant prophecy. It's part of an ancient scroll, the purpose of which is to announce that Israel, Ephraim, God's son, is returning, as it were, from the dead. Ezekiel 37 describes the valley of dry bones. He takes Ezekiel out and he says, look, and what is this, son of man? Can these bones live? And Ezekiel says, you, Lord, know that. And he says, no, speak to the, you remember the prophecy. The bones represent the whole house of Israel, Ephraim and Judah. But there's a process whereby the son of God must come back from the dead. Here's how you do it. Prophesy, speak the word of Jehovah. That's the first thing. First thing that has to go forth is the word of Jehovah. Not some watered down, weak message. Not the opinions of teachers that, you know, don't stick to the text. The word of Jehovah. And even that will only bring them together. It doesn't bring life into them. And then they're lifeless, but they're together at least. What ultimately has to happen is he has to prophesy to the Spirit, and the Spirit breathes on these slain that they live and stand up in his sight, a very great army. This coming forth of the Son is on the third day, Hosea chapter 6. After 2 days, he will raise us up. On the third day, we will live in his sight. If you go back and you look at when the northern kingdom was taken into captivity by Assyria, and you do the math, ladies and gentlemen, we are in the third day. Israel has to repent. To go from being this rebellious, promiscuous woman that Israel is recognized as, Jacob, the whole, is what I'm talking about. To go from that to virgin, one must repent. The iniquities, the new covenant scroll and the new covenant prophecy promises, after stating that you have to pay for your own sins, the only way to remedy is to seek repentance. And then iniquities are forgiven. Sins will not be remembered. The Torah will be written on the hearts. Now, I want to close with chapter 32 of Jeremiah, 32, verse 37. Behold, I will gather them out of all countries into which I've driven them in my anger, and in my fury, and in great wrath. And I will bring them back to this place, and I will cause them to dwell safely. They shall be my people, and I will be their God. And I will give them one heart and one way that they may fear me forever for their good and that of their children after them. And I will make an everlasting covenant with them that I will not turn away from doing good to them, but I will put my fear in their hearts that they should not turn aside from me. And I will rejoice over them to do good, and I will truly plant them in this land with my whole heart and my whole soul. Jehovah sent a word to Jeremiah about a new covenant. And in that scroll, in those 18 sections, material supports the general thrust of what the new covenant is about. It's about God fulfilling the promise that he made from the beginning. And he says that I will bring that group back and plant them in this land with all my heart and all my soul. That, ladies and gentlemen, is Jeremiah's New Covenant scroll, explained as best as I can in about an hour and 15 minutes. Shabbat Shalom.